Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Film Room Podcast, and I am your host, Andy Proctor. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Dylan Olson. In this show, we break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as your favorite college football team buckles up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. All right, everybody. Welcome to week 13 of the college football season. Like I said, my name is Andy. I'm here with Dylan. Dylan, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Good, man. How's your weekend? That's just a weekend. Thanksgiving. How's your Thanksgiving week?
It's been pretty good so far. Just getting things ready. Family's in town. And we're good to go. Nice. Ready for some football.
Are you guys hosting? Are you having people over?
We're going to my mother-in-law's. And so basically, my wife's family is basically all here except for her younger sister.
Nice. So sounds like a good time. Yeah. Well, I am looking forward to Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving has slowly crept up my list of favorite holidays. I love the three F's: family, football, and food. I'm really looking forward to it. My hot take on Thanksgiving is I think we should replace turkey with steak.
Oh, I like that.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, or ham.
Like, imagine a regular, turkey dinner. And heck, you could even still do some turkey, but maybe just do, a turkey breast instead of an entire turkey. Still have some turkey, but imagine, every plate had, a nice little, filet mignon or, a little, nice ribeye.
Oh, that sounds yummy. Turkeys would appreciate it, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like turkey. Turkey's good, but it's always kind of dry. And I just like steak a lot. I like steak. So that would be my contribution to Thanksgiving if people ever ask me to bring food. So anyway, that is neither here nor there. Today we are going to do some film review of Utah versus Iowa State from this last weekend, as well as BYU falling to Arizona State in Tempe. We'll also do a scouting report for BYU's game against Houston, which I believe is happening in Provo. And then we'll also preview Utah's game against the UCF Golden Knights, or just the Knights? I always confuse them with the Las Vegas Golden Knights.
That's a good question, actually. I think it's just the Knights.
So we'll preview that game as well, okay? So let's just jump in real quick. First game we're going to review is Utah versus number 22 Iowa State at Rice-Eccles last week. This game had a little bit more meaning because of the game that ended just before it. We're kind of going over these in backwards order. BYU-ASU had a very dramatic finish just in the moments right before kickoff at Utah-Iowa State. A lot of the fans, I was at the Utah-Iowa State game, and as we were making our way into the stadium, a little bit late, a lot of fans were on their phones or they were watching the screen, watching BYU fall to ASU. So this Utah versus number 22 Iowa State game took on a lot more meaning. Not only for Utah fans, because obviously the Utes needed this game to remain bowl eligible for the year, but they also, this game became crucial for the race in the Big 12, championship game. So, Dylan, what thoughts did you have? What did you think about the Utah game?
excuse me. The drier and colder weather has made me the colder weather comes obviously much later in Arizona, and it's not, I know it's not as cold as Utah, but makes me kind of coffee, I guess, sort of. But so I guess my main thoughts are we don't need to dwell on this, but the tackle on Isaac Wilson that hurt his knee, that seemed really dirty the way he twisted.
Yeah, a bit of a gator roll.
Yeah, that's dude, there's no place for that in the game. We don't need that. But with that said, yeah, Botari looked like he was decent. Is that how you say it? Botari?
Yeah, Luke Botari.
Okay. He likes to keep it on read options, and he looked excuse me. He looked decent. I've seen a lot of people being like, where was this guy? Why was he not our third string after Brandon Rose? And, so.
You kind of have to wonder if it's teams got so used to Isaac Wilson's playing style where he almost always handed off the ball. Like I can't remember very many times where Isaac actually kept the ball on a read option. He probably could have and been way more successful, but it had to have been something that Luke saw in film and just knew that, you know, I'm sure he isn't typically the guy that pulls it all that much, but he just saw, you know, with Iowa State and other teams all year long, just, you know,
yeah.
Utah, you know, it's funny. Kyle always talks about making the teams that he plays one dimensional, and they themselves became super one dimensional all year long, you know, trying to hammer the run game in an effort to open up the passing game. But it was almost like by continuing to harp on the running game, you made yourself more predictable. So anyway,
yeah, it was kind of, well, and if you look at like Mekhi Bernard, 17 carries for 42 yards. I know there were some better rushing numbers for other guys, but that's a 2.5 average. That's not a good game, especially for Micah. Sorry, that always gets me. Mekhi Bernard he's a good running back, so you usually expect a little more from him on that. But
yeah, that was one of his one of his worst games from a statistical standpoint, and just you know nothing on him. Just it was extremely hard to get anything going when everyone kind of knows what you're about to do.
Yeah. So here was kind of my thoughts, and this sort of sums up. It's funny. I saw an interaction on X, and I know it's, I don't know, I'm trying to get off that thing, but it's kind of hard with football. There's so much football stuff on there, but
yeah, it is a cesspool.
Yeah. But you can find some good nuggets here and there. And anyway, I saw a guy talking about how he's basically kind of comparing, like, well, these teams only beat Utah by this much and blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of like, well, you know, there's a lot more nuance to a game than just like, hey, this team beat you by one, this team beat you by three. Even though we've lost more games, it's, you know, are we really that bad, whatever. And I guess my answer to that is, or my thoughts, the reason I bring that up is because I'm like, yeah, I think Utah is a good team. On one side of the ball, they're a really unbalanced team.
Yeah.
You know, defense, they do have out. A really good defense, and that defense can keep you in games. Right. And so you got to think with a halfway competent offense. And I don't need to like totally point fingers on everything, but there have been issues at quarterback and with coordinating. And, so you got to wonder, but I guess to sum it up, Utah had 10 possessions, one turnover, 3 3-and-outs, 4 total punts. One possession was right before half, so that was kind of an outlier. And then Utah's offense went 4 possessions between a field goal and their next offensive score. So one of those was that weird halftime, but you had a 3-and-out, a fumble on the first play of the next drive, and then a drive for 27 yards with a punt. So you have a defensive score, which is they extended the pick six streak. Good for the Utes.
21 years in a row. Baby.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. And then you have a special teams touchdown with a blocked punt. And so you just, I guess I would hope that if Kyle's going to hold on a little bit longer than he maybe intended to, or, you know, going forward, I got to think, okay, we need to change your mindset. Oh, that's the big criticism of Whittingham is like his offenses are always this, right? Which is funny because he's a defensive coach, but you got to think, okay, we need to do something a little bit different with the offense. And there are maybe some bones there. I can't remember everyone's class, so we need to go look at who's coming back, see if you can retain some of the talent.
We looked at kind of who's going, and I can kind of run through that at the end of my little bit here.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess I'm just like, you know, Utah's usually going to have a good to a very good defense. If you can get that offense to be pretty good to good, you've got a really, really nice team. And so that's kind of just looking forward. That's what I'd like to see them. And then I didn't see anything like glaringly bad on defense. It's tough when your offense struggles that much. But I did, it just seemed like Iowa State seemed to make some plays. Like there was a long ball in the second quarter. This is just one quick example, that led to Iowa State's second touchdown. And it didn't look like poor coverage. It looked like the dude had him, and it was just a good catch, you know? And so sometimes that happens. But other than that, I think those are my main thoughts. So,
yeah. Well, when you look at the game overall, you know, I think it really is a testament to how good Utah's defense and the other aspects of their team, you know, the defense and the special teams, how good they are. Because, you know, we were keeping track of the statistics during the game. And you'll have to forgive me. I don't remember exactly at what point. It was before Luke Buttari took the helm. But the Utes offense had about 99 yards of production through the first three quarters or so.
Yikes.
And the total yards produced by the defense and the punt teams, or the special teams, was like 150 or something like that. Because you had the interception for a touchdown, which went back 56 yards. Then you had...
That dude had some great blocking, by the way, for him. He was, this is going to sound bad.
Yeah.
He's much faster than I am, but he looked slow on screen, which was kind of funny, but he had some really good team blocking there.
Yeah, Lander Barton, he definitely needs a little bit more speed, right? And then if you remember, Iowa State had a muffed punt, so Utah went to punt the ball, you know, punted it a good 50, 60 yards downfield, and the Iowa State punt returner muffed it. Utah recovered it, so if you count that punt team kind of net yardage, that was like a good, you know, another 50 or 60 yards. So there's 110, 115 yards defensive or offensive or defensive or special teams production. And then you had the block punt, which went for another, I think they were punting from, the ball was on the Utes 25 or 30 yard line. The ball got blocked all the way back in the end zone. So there's another 30 yards, let's say, of offense. So Utah's defense and special teams had, I mean, you don't keep track of yards of production defensively, but they were able to create essentially about 130, 140 yards of production and two scores. And then I think, if I remember correctly, and a field goal, that which came off of the muffed punt. So,
17 points,
what a
man.
Testament to how, what was that?
17 points.
Yeah, 17 points off of special teams and defense. I mean, that's just so critical, right? And then you just look and see, really, on the other side of the ball, you know, Iowa State, I mean, they were held to three and out on the first series of the game. And then, you know, obviously the interception that went for a touchdown was kind of unlucky. It wasn't like a terribly thrown ball. It was a ball that got kind of batted around and just, you know, went a good way for us as Utah fans. Besides those two series, like, you know, they scored a touchdown, they had a field goal, they missed a field goal, which was unlucky, but again, they put themselves in a position to get points. They scored a touchdown, and then they scored another touchdown, and then they had a punt. So they really only had, like, you know, two or three series that, you know, aside from a couple big plays, offensively, they really played a pretty complete game. You know, they scored 31 points, which will usually do it for you. And I guess there's a benefit to, you know, this podcast being very small. We don't really answer to anybody. It's not like Kyle's going to kick us out for bashing on him. So I see no need to be able to, you know, to dance around it. I really think I have no problem pointing fingers, at, you know, quarterback play and offensive coordinating, you know, whether it was Andy Ludwig or whether it was this new guy that they have brought in, I forget his name, but, it just, you have to see that when you've had one player filling your QB2 role all year and then stepping into QB1 when Cam got injured, you know, in Isaac Wilson, and then very unfortunately we're sad to see him get hurt, we hope he gets better, whatever it is, but you have your fifth string quarterback step in to take control of the huddle, and he outperforms the guy that's been at the helm all season. Gosh, that makes me feel like, did we have our fifth string quarterback in all year long? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, was Isaac really our fifth string quarterback? Is he who should have been fifth on the depth chart? You know, we had four other quarterbacks ahead of him, ahead of Luke Buttari, and gosh, he came in and he just excelled. And I think that that's one of those situations where we have to really question the University of Utah's coaching staff's ability to scout and evaluate quarterback talent. We've never had the most talented quarterbacks, right? We had Jalen Daniels' ear for a little bit before he decided to go to ASU and then ultimately transfer to LSU, but he never seriously considered us. We've had a couple guys that were good but not great, and we've always been able to make do with that because we've had a defense that's lights out and a running game that is killer. But if you take out one of those pieces, one of those three pieces, you know, a moderately decent quarterback that can throw the ball a little bit and create some space for the running game, or a running back that's talented, or a good defense, you take away any one of those three, and I think the house of cards just kind of comes tumbling down on itself, you know?
Yeah.
You see that gap in talent between Luke Botari and Isaac Wilson, just in their ability to make a quick decision, to make a throw, to scramble effectively and have that scramble be productive. And, you know, you see just a change immediately. You know, after Luke Botari comes in, he comes in, scores a touchdown right away, and you know, drives down and has the opportunity to try to score another touchdown. You see all these games that Utah, you know, they're 4-7 now. You see all these games that they lost by one score or less. You know, five of their seven losses have come by 8 points or less. And it's just like, gosh, could Utah be,
10-2,
9-2 right now if they had played literally any other quarterback from the start of the season?
Yeah, it does make you wonder. Not to get like too big brained or, go into like conspiracy theories or anything, but I wonder, and I don't know, I like to think that Kyle's been there for a long time and kind of has the, you know, he's got his roots planted enough that this isn't going to make him waver or bend or anything. But I wonder, you know, if Isaac's got family connections that are, you know, donations or something like
it,
that.
It could be.
And yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'd like to think no, but maybe that's something. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, next year, I don't know. I've been seeing stuff about Rising. I don't know. I guess there's a part of me that loves the like romanticism of Rising coming back and being like, no, this is the year. But, in practicality, I'm kind of like, I wonder if you move forward and next year it's like, hey, Rose, Batari, and Wilson, get after it. Let's see who gets it.
So Batari graduates.
Oh, okay.
Batari will leave. So will Sam Heward, who was another one of the quarterbacks that a grad transfer we had. I am so grateful to Cam for everything he's done and all the hard work he's put in and the way he's sacrificed his body for us. I hate to say it, but I have zero tolerance for any decision to bring him back into the huddle. It is time to move on.
Yeah, that's in my mind. That's kind of, I'm, I guess, a little bit less strongly worded, but I feel very similarly to you where I'm like, I think that's the best move is to move on. And maybe you've got another recruit coming in, but I think you got to let Rose and Wilson and any other guys you have battle it out.
Well, you know, the wild thing is they have said multiple times, Kyle has mentioned it multiple times, you know, hey, you know, Isaac's our future and we're, you know, looking forward to letting him get some reps. And I'm like, how? Like, I get that it's, you know, it's really ideal that you have, I think he was a 4-star recruit as a quarterback. And that's really ideal that you have a 4-star guy coming in as a freshman. He's getting meaningful reps as a freshman. And that really bodes well for his future, no matter how, you know, poorly he might have played this year. But it's also kind of wild to me that any coach can, you know, they always say, hey, the best player will play. Doesn't matter who it is or what week it is, but the fact that, and maybe he's just speaking in generalities, I don't know, but the fact that he can say, yeah, you know, Isaac is going to be our guy going forward. I'm like, isn't that a decision for next spring and then next summer and then next fall and then the days leading up to your first game? You know, isn't that, you know, a competition that you want to have wide open and the best player will play, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. You hope those words don't bite you in the butt and Rose goes, okay, well, if that's how they feel, then I'm going to go pack in.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, I think Brandon Rose is if you're you know, barring getting any other sort of really amazing transfer quarterback, which I am not a big fan, unless you're Oklahoma or Oregon or Alabama, you know, I'm not a big fan of the idea of going for a quarterback in the transfer portal just because the culture is not there. You know, but Kyle is big on you become us, we don't become you type of mentality. And that's just really hard to get a guy to come in and just mold and mesh with your culture so fast. So I think going forward, the way that Brandon played in the first half of the BYU game, if he can replicate that even to the slightest extent next year, I think that Utah stands a much better chance to have a Big 12 rebound year, much like BYU had this year. So
yeah.
Disappointing to see Utah go down 31-28 to Iowa State. I guess the silver lining for Utah fans is that they didn't make it possible for BYU to go to the Big 12 championship. But in an agonizing fashion, they ended the last game of this this year, the last year of these many amazing seniors' careers in Rice-Eccles with a loss, and denied themselves bowl eligibility for the year. Not that any bowl games that are not playoff games have much meaning any longer, but it was sad to see the boys so emotional. We're going to miss seeing them here in Rice-Eccles. So,
yeah. Well,
moving on to really quite an interesting story, a very back and forth game with a dramatic finish. BYU losing to Arizona State 28-23. The first thing I'm going to say about this game, I'm going to keep it as civil as possible. Maybe. Jake Kelso, if you're listening, I love you. We want to have you back on the podcast. Please forgive me for anything I say that's offensive. I still love you. That being said, Dylan, what were your, just give us kind of an overview of this ASU BYU game. What kind of happened? How did the game go? What were your thoughts about it?
So first off, seeing a lot of the discourse, I'm like, guys, stop. Get help.
in regards to what?
Just, sorry. To the whole discussion of, like, it's just ridiculous. People are like, oh, BYU fans are hypocrites because they're, you know, when their guy swears, I'm like, guys, it's swearing. I think the vast majority of BYU fans understand that that happens in football. Maybe your grandparents, right. Maybe your grandparents think that the old BYU, you know, that's kind of the thing. But I think most of us aren't under any illusions. Sorry, go ahead.
Just to interject real quick, you're talking about the leaked video of the halftime.
Yeah.
The rousing halftime speech from Tyler Batty, where he, like anybody, gosh, I was excited. I was so happy to hear him speak the way he was speaking to his teammates. It wasn't degrading or you know, insulting. It was impassioned, and it was, well, obviously very a little bit vulgar,
yeah,
to express the way he was feeling, but there was a leaked video of him kind of, you know, the audio of him giving this impassioned discussion at halftime. And so you're talking about that.
Yeah.
Apparently there's some discussion about whether or not BYU players should speak in such a way.
Look, I get it. Like, I get that you have an idea of what, because of its affiliation with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that there's a certain amount of, like, decorum and there's honor code and stuff. But I'm like, guys, it's football. And so it's just funny seeing fans, like, get on BYU fans for that. And then it's funny. It's also funny because I see BYU fans and they're like, oh, well, people were swearing and stuff. And I'm like, well, like, people were swearing at us. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're at a ranked college football matchup. Like, what did you think was going to, I'm not saying, it's okay or it's not okay, but, like, you got to know what you're getting into. I draw the line when you're, like, swearing at kids. You know, that is something, right. And like being that way towards kids, I'm like, no, that's not okay. My wife's sister-in-law has a brother that they had a really, and I am not trying to paint ASU fans all one way, but they had a really bad experience at the game with their kids that, you know, they had kids crying and stuff, and it was like, you know, that's tough. You don't want to see it. But like I said, I mean, I don't know. If you're going to Lavelle Edwards, you can kind of feel fine just like buying seats wherever. If you're going to a visiting team, you gotta know that you gotta sit with the away fans. You gotta know what's gonna happen. You know, these are college kids. And then the other thought I had was, so I want to preface this. I like Kenny Dillingham's passion, And I like, he's a dude that's just like, he's living his best life right now. He has his dream job. Like, that's his dream job. It's his alma mater, right? There were
Kenny Dillingham, just real quick. He's the very young. He's like 34 years old. He's the head coach of the ASU football team. He's a former ASU student. He's an alumni of the university.
Yeah.
He came in to replace Herm Edwards, and he's been doing a bang up job, I think, of really connecting with the players. He's super passionate.
Look at what they're doing this year. I mean, they're good. You know, ASU's a good football team.
They're way better than they were.
I will say, like, I'm okay with some passion, and we see Kalani do some passionate things sometimes on the field. I'm okay if you yell at the ref once, right? But like on the roughing the passer, which was definitely a roughing the passer in today's standards. excuse me. He would not stop screaming at the ref and just wouldn't stop. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, objectively, not just an ASU thing. I'm not just being bitter because we lost to them, but any coach, there's a point where it's like, okay, yell at a ref once. Okay, fine. Just continuing to scream at them. If I'm a ref, I'm like, dude, I'm not taking this. I'm throwing the flag. And then after, you know,
I guess every ref has different levels of patience.
That's
and
every
true. Coach has different levels of, I guess I don't know what to call it. Passion. I guess we'll call it passion.
Yeah. So, and so I'm like, you know, and then the quote unquote end of the game, what he was doing there too, it was like, dude, you're just, I'd say it. I know you're mad. I know you're frustrated, but like, I'd say it, you're objectively wrong. There's time left on the clock. They got to play it out. And so I don't need to make this like this doesn't need to be the burn book, for Kenny Dillingham. Right. That's a Mean right. Girls reference. But it was just something that was like frustrating and unimpressive. And then to have, the discourse with fans and everything, it was just kind of an interesting thing. And I'm just kind of like annoyed with all of it. And so now that we've wasted 5 minutes talking about that, sorry, I feel bad. I want to say, give me the rematch. I want a rematch in the Big 12 championship game.
Let's take a minute just to talk just briefly about how this game went, so we can kind of understand what better needs to happen. If they do have a rematch, you know, in the fortunate case, if it happens at all, that they're able to have a rematch in the Big 12 championship. So
that's
the game very much started going ASU's way, right? BYU started with the ball, were able to make their way, took them 7 plays to go 30 yards, took about 3.5 minutes off the clock, and then they were held on downs, which, you know, I'm not as big of a, I'm a fan, I guess, of going for it early on fourth down. There's, you know, very little the risk. You know, the game's tied. It's, you know, if you get it, it can really swing the momentum your way. They get held on downs, and then ASU promptly goes down and scores a touchdown. Okay. BYU throws an interception. It was kind of one of those, again, the ball gets batted up in the air.
Deflected passes, I think, are a feature, not a bug, of Retzlaff's game. We've seen too many of those for me to think it's just a couple of freak deflections now.
Yeah, he probably needs to learn to look off the safety a little bit better, or look off the lineman.
But, yeah.
I mean, BYU didn't, they actually ended up holding them and not really, they actually intercepted them right back. But it still was just such a momentum killer, you know, trying to respond. And then when BYU intercepted the ball back from ASU, they ended up having to punt anyway, which then ASU went down and scored. Promptly kicked a surprise onside kick and scored again to go up 21-0. Very much just, it was one of those things where you wanted to just, you know, grab the players and shake them by their shoulder pads and just, you know, tell them to wake up. One of those games that just the momentum, it got out of hand and fast. They were able to kind of scramble together, get an 8-play drive, just over 1 minute, and went down and scored a field goal, kicked a field goal before half. And then they came down and they actually held ASU on downs. They ASU drove down 71 yards, actually, down to the BYU 4-yard line, and was able to hold them goal line stand. So that was a good turnaround. Then they traded a couple touchdowns back and forth. BYU was able to hold them on a punt and a couple fourth down, a turnover on downs. But at the end of the game, it just was a little bit too late. Jake Retzlaff having a minute and 30 left to try to win the game through what we thought would be a game sealing interception that Arizona State then returned down all the way, I think, to the BYU like 5 or 6 or 7 yard line. And then I thought this was a really interesting approach by Kenny Dillingham. I mean, gosh, if it's me and I have a minute and 3 seconds left or whatever it is, I have a minute and 30 seconds left, whatever it is, I just kind of take a couple knees and then kick a field goal. You know, that I guess that would have put me up 8 points, you know?
Yeah.
Gives BYU, maybe 30 seconds to try to go down and score. Or I just try to drive in them for the touchdown. I mean, then the game is yours. But, you know, they kind of did the thing where they ran around and they, you know, tried to kneel the ball, and then they threw the ball up into the air, which, by the way, I thought should have been grounding, considering that the Big 12 refs threw a much less worthy grounding call on Luke Botari a couple hours later in the Utah game. That and then the fans rushing the field early, I thought merited definitely a sideline warning that was worth, 5 yards plus 15 yards on top of the grounding. I thought that BYU should have been on the 30-yard line having an attempt, not at a Hail Mary per se, but at an actual scripted play that had a chance to go to the end zone. But at the end of the day, I have to give ASU a lot of credit. I mean, they came out just fiery and ready to go. And there was not a whole lot to say besides the fact that they just came out and they whooped BYU in the first half. I mean, BYU was not ready for that game. In the first quarter, they responded really well. But again, it's a lot of the same from the Cougs. It's too little, too late in the game. And, you look to see, gosh, what could have happened with this year if they had learned to start early, if for whatever it is in Kalani's coaching strategy that allows them to be, okay with not performing early in the game. I don't know what that is, but.
Yeah, so I have some thoughts about that. So first off, the reason I brought up all that other stuff was because it was like, kind of like, hey, if BYU plays two halves of football, you got to think that's a win. But it was interesting because Chase Roberts talked with, I think it was with Spencer. So shout out to my former coworker, Spencer Linton, who I'm sure is probably not listening to this, but if he is, thank
maybe
you.
He is.
Yeah, if he is, thank you. But and I'm pretty sure this was when he was talking to Chase. But Chase Roberts talked about how they came out flat in the first half, and they were just kind of like, I mean, he didn't say asleep, but that's kind of what I think he said flat. And I am like, how? This is the biggest game in your modern history, with a chance at the Big 12 championship on the line. How do you come up flat for that? I don't understand it. Yeah, and so I'm like, I don't get what happened there. And that's a big problem. And then the other thing, I'm going to pose a question to you. This is like hot take question. And I don't necessarily, I'll give my answer as well, but is it time to seriously talk about, Roderick's job at offensive coordinator? What are your thoughts? And then I'll give you mine.
Sorry, to talk about who at offensive coordinator?
Sorry, Aaron Roderick at offensive coordinator for BYU.
I don't hate Aaron Roderick's approach at BYU. I think he has a good, healthy balance of running and passing. I think he almost has like a reverse. I don't remember exactly what his offensive strategy was like when he was at Utah, but I would say that his... To me, it seems that his offensive coordinating strategy is almost the opposite of what Kyle has been doing the last couple of years at the U. At the U, they tend to run first to try to open up the pass. And I think that that A-Rod, he does a great job of trying to, pass the ball and open up the field and make these teams have to spread out to cover your receivers, all these talented receivers, so that guys like Hinkley, Rapati, and LJ Martin have room to run. I think they do a good job of running a good mixture of creative plays. There've been a couple games in the last year or two that we've noticed where A-Rod will make some questionable decisions It's almost like he's trying to not let the defense figure him out, and so he starts changing up his play calls unnecessarily. It's like, dude, if running the ball is working, keep running the ball. Don't try to throw an out route against Oklahoma, you know, to the corner of the end zone or to the front pylon of the end zone, and then you know, if you could just run the ball in, and then all of a sudden Oklahoma has a pick six to seal the game. And,
yeah.
You know, same thing with a bunch of games this year. It's like, hey, like, don't, you know, it's same thing against Kansas. You're driving the ball with the chance to win the game at the end. You know, don't all of a sudden, you know, try to throw this end zone fade. You know, just run the ball in.
Yeah.
That would be my biggest critique of A-Rod as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But I for one, don't see any. I mean, BYU fans, I love them to death, but they are pretty quick to call for firing of coordinators, both offensive and defensive.
Yeah. So for me, and the reason
in my mind,
yeah. And so the reason I bring that up is because I am losing patience with the last few games, but I'm also not in the like fire him camp, right? Because there is the like, hey, we're 9-2, we've outperformed expectations, and I'm like, yeah, that's right. But we also haven't scored a touchdown in 60 minutes of football between two games in championship berth clinching situations. So there are things, and you know, he talks about execution, but there comes a point where it's like, all right, execution isn't happening on a semi-regular basis. And second half did look much better, but there were some things that I'm kind of like, you know, like LJ Martin's averaging 4.5 a carry. Why aren't we giving him the ball more, you know, in that game? It was almost like he gets stuffed and then we'd, you know, punish him by not giving him, not really punish, but just not giving the ball for a while. Yeah. And so I'm just thinking about it. And so for me, I'm like, you know what? I'm not in the fire Roderick camp, but I do think the leash is shortening.
When you look at it, we had, we had 440 yards of offensive production, 346 of which came through the air. And we had two receivers that were over 100 yards receiving in both Darius Lassiter and Chase Roberts, who I think are our best offensive weapons apart from Jake Retzlaff. You know, like, I think that as a group, the running backs, they all had about 94 yards rushing, which is a little shy. You like to see up into the 120s or more when you're rushing. But I think overall, it wasn't necessarily the offensive production. I mean, it was the offensive production for sure at the start, but it was a combination of just, you know, all things put together. It's, you've got to be solid on offense. You've got to convert on third and fourth down. Your defense has to wake up to start the game. And your special teams, you can't allow, you know, gosh, the last couple of games, those two games we've lost come down to, you know, if you don't allow a surprise on sides to happen, if your special teams guys are disciplined, watching the ball get kicked and recovering a ball, if they don't allow a punt to bounce off the back of their helmet, And then as they're diving to recover a fumble, basically, you know, propel the ball to your 1 yard line for the opposing team to recover. If those small little mistakes don't happen, you know, BYU wins both of those games by about a touchdown or less. So I think this is fair. It has to do with the captain, the main captain, the head coach. That was the biggest thing I was angry about. As angry as I was at seeing the way that all those ASU students treated the BYU coaching staff and all the cussing and all this and that, and, you know, Kenny Dillingham cussing at the refs or whatever. All the things I was most mad about was Kalani being entirely way too happy with how his team performed. And also with him not being irate even one little bit about the field being rushed. If that was me, I would be up in arms about, you know, the effect that it has on my team and our ability to perform and our mindset.
The potential danger your team could be in.
The danger, you know, the fact that Kenny Dillingham is basically trying to say, hey, the rules don't matter, just give us this game. I'm like, that's... And I get that Kalani's a chill guy, and it's kind of powerful to not allow things to get under your skin like that. But at the same time, you know, I think some of that calm, cool, you know, kind of just water off your back mentality is what allowed BYU to get all the way to the first half before, thank heavens, Tyler Batty took the rest of his team by the lapels and shook him and woke him up, because I don't know if Kalani, granted, I've never not heard, and I've never heard Kalani's halftime speeches be, you know, just, you know, sunshine and butterflies, but I have a hard time believing that he gets as intense as we heard Tyler Batty get.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Kalani has energy. Like, he's got it. I think he actually has a good balance of energy and cool-headedness. I just sometimes am like, maybe your judgment of timing of when that energy needs to be, like, sometimes I think, because I don't think he places the energy, the high energy, at the wrong times. I think there are times where he needs it, where he's not channeling it in that direction, like you're saying. And so that is interesting.
I mean, I've spoken before about, like, you know, I didn't love Bronco Mendenhall because he was only ever negative feedback. He's only ever negative, reinforcement. And I love Kalani that he uses positive reinforcement a lot. However, there are times when, you know, positive reinforcement and, hey guys, it's all going to be okay, that's not going to have the effect on
you. Need a kick in the pants sometimes
in that moment. Sometimes you need a kick in the shins or a slap in the face to wake you up and say, you know, you need to wake up, you need to do your job. You know, this is not who we are. It's not what we train for. So that's my biggest thing.
Yeah. So
in regards to, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so real quick, two of my biggest keys to this game that we talked about last night were physicality and, and then who we were going to apply, try and key in on defense. So physicality in the first half, I think, so I brought up that run game. I think if BYU plays more physically, their run game is more successful in the first half. Cause in the second half, when you're down that much, it makes sense that you got to throw the ball more. Right. I was watching us particularly on offense and I'm going, what is going on? They're beating our guys off the line. They're breaking through our backfield. They are pumped.
The trenches were a bloodbath.
Yeah, and they were like, those guys were jacked, like just on something. I don't know. They were like Energizer bunnies. They were all over the place, and our guys looked like almost shell-shocked. And so I guess that's where I was. So that was one thing that, and they came out in the second half, and it was a lot better. But that was one thing that made me think, like, okay, that was a key to the game that we talked about. And then the other thing was, and I kind of want to ask you about this, because Scataboo did get 150 yards almost. And so maybe I was wrong. Maybe he was the guy. He is really good. Maybe he was the guy that we should have keyed on. But I got to think, like, we played one half of good football and we were right there. And I know that ASU also only played one half of, like, really good football. Their second half was pretty lackluster. But I just got to think that, granted, Tyson did have a lot of yards, but if you take away you take away that one big chunk play, he has 8 catches for 71 yards instead of 9 catches for, what was it, like 110 and like 19 per catch, you know? So he had a chunk play and then he had a good game, but not like a amazing game. I think it's more manageable, but I guess I'm just saying, I still think that the formula is there to beat them. So
in my mind, the player of the game for sure went out to Cam Scataboo. I mean, besides like Derrick Henry and maybe some of those running backs from Alabama back in like the late 2000s, it's been a long time since I've seen a running back be so dominant physically. I mean, just guys bouncing off.
He's an animal, dude. He really, he's just like a wrecking ball.
He was a good get for Arizona State. That is for sure. So,
and props to him for sticking it out there and having a season like this season after having a season like last season, you know?
Oh, for sure. Like I hate to say it, but I can't root for ASU, in the Big 12 championship just because just the way that game went down, it's going to be hard for me to do that. However, if ASU makes it to the playoff and they end up against the likes of Miami or Ohio State, or like, I think I'm going to have to find myself rooting for my conference. If anything, again,
and a player like Scataboo,
Jake here, Jake Kelso, I'm just going to root for Jake Kelso. That's who I'm going to root for.
Yeah.
Okay. In regards to what needs to happen this week for BYU in order to make the Big 12 conference championship game, they're going to be watching two games that happen before them. They will be watching Arizona State versus Arizona.
I think ASU is only favored by like a point or a point and a half in that game, by the way.
Uh-huh. Yep. And it is that game is in Tucson at Saturday at 1:30. And then we have number 24 Kansas State, who is 8-3, versus number 18 Iowa State, and that will happen at Iowa State at Saturday at 5:30 p.m. If either of those games go BYU's way, meaning Arizona State loses to Arizona or Kansas State loses to Iowa State, and BYU wins their game against Houston, who is 4-7, then they will secure a spot in the conference championship. Now, depending on who loses, if ASU loses, I think the ASU is out, and they would be paired up against Colorado.
Iowa State.
Iowa
State. Yeah, because Colorado's got three losses. Iowa State. They both only have two conference losses. Right. They do. But I think because they have, I think for Colorado to get in, and I think Iowa State and ASU need to lose, and then BYU and Colorado need to win. But I could be wrong there. I think that's how it is, though.
But. And I think what would be the more likely result if Kansas State is able to technically upset Iowa State and ASU wins out, then it would be Arizona State and BYU rematch over there in Arlington. So that is what BYU fans should be hoping for. I personally would actually love, I think for me, the most fun matchup would be BYU versus Colorado. It would be fun to have a rematch against ASU just a week, 2 weeks later. Either of those, I think, would be fun. But first, they have to take care of business against their cousins, the Houston Cougars.
Identity crisis for BYU fans. Red Cougars?
I know, right? What? Yeah, Red Cougars. What's happening? So, we did some coverage of Houston earlier this year. Not an exceedingly well-performing team. However, to be fair, we think pretty highly of our Utes, and they have the same record as Houston, and the Utes did drop a game to Houston as well.
Looking back on
Houston's... Yeah, that's true. Looking back on Houston's schedule, probably their most favorable wins or close games for them. They had a very close game against, at the time, ranked 15th. Oklahoma, they lost 12-16. They did beat TCU, who beat Utah, and then they did beat their most notable win of the season would be a couple weeks ago when they upset then ranked number 17 Kansas State 24-19 at home.
And they did beat Utah.
They did beat Utah. So, you know, looking at how closely BYU played Kansas State, who lost to Houston again, I hate to call it a trap game because it gives me anxiety. But this very much could be a game that BYU should not overlook. I hope they've learned their lesson, against Kansas and against ASU, that they need to come out and focus solely on this week and this week alone.
You know what'll be interesting is both Iowa State's and ASU's games will be over when BYU's game starts because they got the 8-15. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yes. So we'll kind of know, you know, if this game
means,
hey, we're going bowling, or if it means, hey, we have a shot to make our way into the Big 12 championship.
I would hope you don't even think about that and you just go out ready to absolutely annihilate this team in your home finale. But
I can kind of see both sides of the coin. On one hand, you don't want them to be lackadaisical going in thinking, oh, hey, all we have to do is beat this 4-7 team and we're in. On the other hand, though, I think a little bit of good juju goes a long way, you know, being motivated, excited, having something that you can be really impassioned about. Cause I can also see if it's like, there it goes. We don't have a shot to go to the playoff. We may as well, you know, this game doesn't really matter. They start to get, you know, kind of down on themselves, you know, then potentially you lose again and maybe you drop out entirely of all the rankings. And then you end up playing some even more meaningless bowl game against, you know, Tulane or I don't know, something like that, as opposed to maybe getting a really cool matchup against, you know, say Miami were to lose, you know, or just whoever it is that else that could be a really cool matchup for them in a bowl game.
Well, ironically, because for bowl purposes, Colorado still could potentially count as a Pac-12 team because of bowl ties and contracts and stuff. I looked and BYU's projected to be in the Alamo Bowl against either Colorado or Washington State.
Oh, really?
Which is interesting. Cool. And that's a good bowl game. But yeah, no, I'm like, just, I can't remember the coach's name. It always escapes me, but there's the famous college basketball coach who would just say, just win, baby. And so
just win, baby.
Yeah, that's kind of how I am. And we'll get into the personnel, but, I want to, for Houston real quick, these guys, I think, have been shut out twice. They are 132nd out of 134 teams in FBS in points per game at 13.6 points per game. Mm-hmm. Zion Chris, their quarterback's a decent athlete, and they have taken advantage of that, of teams overlooking them. But, I mean, they are, like, bottom 10 in so many big metrics. I mean, 290 yards a game is good for 129th in FBS. 26.6 third down conversion is 131st in FBS. They don't pass a lot. They only have 152 pass yards a game, which is 125th. They give the ball away 2.1 times per game, which is 128th. And they struggle. They have guys that can do things there. So we can kind of get into this. Zion Chris is an athlete. 6'3", 210 quarterback. And he has not started all season. They've done some quarterback rotation. But last four games.
He's a big dude, too. He's,
yeah.
Maybe you said this already. So he's 6'3", and he's 210 pounds. It's a big dude.
Yeah.
Number two. So be on the lookout for number two behind
center. Yes. And his last four games, he has had 10, 18, 22, and 17 carries, respectively. So he's part of the run game.
Likes to run it.
Yeah. So, and in games where he has 10 or more carries, he's getting about 60 a game and he's got two touchdowns. So there is, there is some danger there.
This stat would make me salivate, though, if I'm BYU's, if I'm Jay Hill, the defensive coordinator for BYU. He has four touchdowns thrown and he has seven interceptions for a QB rating of 38.6.
Yes, he is a 112.8 passing yards per game in games where he attempted 10 or more throws.
Not stellar.
Yeah. So
not stellar. Yeah.
Not great. And then they've got Rashawn Sanford II is their running back, number 26, 5'9", 185. He's averaging about 37 yards a game. He's got 413 on the season. He's had games, though, where he's only getting two or three carries, and he averages five yards a carry. So that's decent. And he's got a touchdown. That's more than decent. That's pretty good.
Continue talking about the running game. Number 21, Stacy Sneed. He actually was the guy. He hadn't produced as much so that far in the season when they played the Utes, but he actually was one of the guys that gashed Utah for quite a lot of yards, even though he wasn't, really their main guy.
Yeah.
He's also pretty small. He's 5'11", 180. He's got 57 carries on for 301 yards and one touchdown. Averages about 5.5 yards per carry. So he's one of their main three rushers on the team, with the second leading rusher being Zion Chris, who was pretty impressive that in just, because they made a switch halfway through the season between him and Donovan Smith.
Yeah.
Having played a couple games, he's the second leading rusher on the season. So they've got kind of those three main guys that are responsible for moving the ball on the ground.
Yeah. And so, I mean, here's some, like, the last four games, Houston has scored 10 points, 3 points, 24 points, 17 points, 14 points.
Well, the 24 point wasn't so bad.
No, and that was their win against Kansas State. But, 10, 3, 17, 17 was their win against Utah, but 14 against Kansas. Right. And then they were shut out by Iowa State, and they were shut out by Cincinnati. So it's kind of
It looks fortunate for BYU. If they can continue to play the way they have so far this year, with the only caveat being that they need to start faster, I think that BYU should be able to take care of business in Houston, or excuse me, in Provo.
Yeah, and then, so I can't remember, they have a new receiver that's like leading in yards, but two big receivers are Joseph Manjack IV, which, what a name, and then Mecky Muse. He's a small, fast guy. He leads, Mecky Muse actually leads in 29 receptions. He leads the team there. None of them have anything crazy to think about, like yards and stuff. Like, I think they're leading, their new leading receiver in yards, I think it's they still like 360 or something like that. So nothing crazy, but.
Yeah, they have number five, Stephon Johnson. Yep. He's 6 foot, 180.
That's the guy.
He's got 348 yards on 27 receptions and only two touchdowns. But he averages almost 13 yards of reception. So when he gets the ball, he can do some damage. He just doesn't get it all that often.
Yeah, and I think he had a really big game against against Baylor. State. Oh, against Kansas State. Yeah, so a lot of his yards come in that one game. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, overall, they don't seem, I think the biggest challenge for BYU with this game is going to be containing the running quarterback, containing Zion Chris, making sure that he doesn't, you know, if he's going to try to run it, you know, that you know it's coming. You know, don't allow him to try to drop back and scramble and you know, allow for open receivers to maybe make some big plays. You know, if you can get some covered sacks, you know, I would probably just spy the guy all game long. And by that, by spy, for those of us that aren't aware, usually you try to have all of your defenders either dropping into pass coverage or trying to rush the quarterback. Having a spy simply means you just have one of your linebackers just kind of sit in the middle of space, and wherever the quarterback goes, that's where he goes. So you have one guy that's just assigned to make sure the quarterback doesn't run. So that's what I would do if I were Jay Hill. I would just spy him. I'd probably go, you know, with a four-man rush most of the time just to get some, you know, good moderate pressure, maybe five-man rush, and just have a spy at all times and allow your really excellent pass defense, your defensive backfield, to do what they do and just, you know, get you some good coverage sacks.
Yeah. So Houston's strong point in their game and where they've kind of, I think, been able to surprise teams is their defense is actually decently solid. Their pass defense is 23rd in FBS with 190 yards per game.
Really?
Yeah, and their run defense is solid. It's 40th in FBS at 130 yards per game. And they get about 1.5 takeaways. They have, where is he? So safety number two, A.J. Halsey, 6 foot, 215. He's seven pass breakups, five picks, and 69 total tackles.
That's a lot of picks.
Yeah, he's second on the team in tackles as well. So he's kind of their go-to guy. But they have a solid defense, and I think that's what's been able to help them in games is to keep the team from scoring, and then you just got to get a little bit extra over the line. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, I think the issue, though, that can be with their defense is that they they're on the field too long, and then their offense can't keep up when someone starts to pull away. So
they have the Utah-itis.
Yeah.
The offense the defense can't sustain a struggling offense.
Yeah, that's right. So, I don't know. Did you have anything else they on their defense?
Just a couple personnel. And by the way, of linebackers, the leading tackler on the team is Michael Batten, number 44. He's 6'1", 220.
Kind of your classic linebacker. Your classic linebacker, just like tackling machine.
Yep. He's just big and strong, fast. He's got 86 tackles of the year, 39 of which he has done by himself. Three sacks on the year and one interception. He's a guy to look out for. The other linebacker is Jamal Morris, number 25. Another fella that's nice and big. He's 6'2", 225, also homegrown talent from Houston. He's got 55 tackles on the year, including one sack. So you got a good pair of linebackers back there. And then the next one, two, three leading tacklers on the team are all defensive backs, which usually does not bode well for defense if your defensive backs are the ones making a lot of tackles.
Yeah.
There are, five players that lead tackles on the team before you get to their first defensive lineman, who is Keith Cooper Jr., number 5 on the defense. He's a defensive end, I believe.
Yeah.
6'5". Actually, he might be a defensive tackle. 6'5", 280.
Yeah, and he's a guy. So he's their team leader in sacks with 3.5. So he's got 42 total tackles and a pass deflection. He's tall, so I'm just, Jake, like, be aware of where he is and make sure your throwing lanes are open. Because, you know, we've just had too many deflections resulted in interceptions and
we've had a lot.
Killed drives and stuff. So, they it's pretty simple. I mean, unless you have something else for the defense, I was just going to say go ahead if you got something.
No, I don't.
Okay, I was just going to say a game plan for BYU seems pretty simple. Don't turn the ball over. Get up early and don't take your foot off the gas. Run the ball down their throats and then keep them in third and long situations because they're so bad at third down.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, no, I feel like this should be in every game plan, but don't turn the ball over.
For sure.
I'm predicting 34-10 BYU, but I hope it's more like 41 or 45-10. Just to get like a, get the offensive, you know, the bad mojo out the door, and get, you know, I found my mojo, baby. And, you know, get your mojo back and just pound it.
Austin Powers reference. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. I would, spur of the moment. I would love to see BYU though, get 200 yards rushing. And just
that'd
like just handle the game,
I would love
you
that.
Know. Just like
yeah,
there's you know, there's nothing. Just really just pound the rock, shove it down their throats. Kind of a boring but dominant win. So that's kind of where I'm at. But any other thoughts, or do you want to move on to Utah?
I would just for my prediction, I would say yeah, very similar to what you had said. I'll say something like 31-7. 31-3, something like that. I'm hoping that BYU's defense can really continue to perform the way that it has, except for the last two games, hold them to very few points, almost a shutout. You know, maybe just some garbage time points would be great. And then, you know, hoping to see the offense get back to, like I said, it hasn't done terribly all year. It's consistently put up, you know, 28 to 31 points or something like that. But I just want to see him get up early. That's all I want to see.
Yeah. So, we both have about 30, you know, in the 30 to 35 range. I want to see them break 40 just as a statement, you know.
Yeah, it'd be great. So, that'd be awesome. Would love that. Let's just jump in really quick. We'll cover the Utes' final game of the season. They won't be going bowling at all this year, so the best they'll be able to do is 5-7, which, boy, who saw that coming?
I certainly didn't.
I did not. On Friday night at 6 p.m. on Fox, they will be facing the Central Florida Knights, who are also 4-7, so this will be a battle to see who sucks worse.
Pillow fight.
I'd say that. The biggest story, yeah, pillow fight. The biggest story, I think, for me is, from what I've read online, is that Isaac Wilson will not be available, and it is very likely that Luke Butari will be starting the game. I was cheering this all game last week. I'm embarrassed to say I was calling for Isaac to be switched out pretty early. Butari Ferrari. I love it. Let's go, Luke.
Yeah. Bring out the Ferrari, one last ride.
Yeah.
So
not a whole lot to say about this game. I think that Utah's defense, if it can, I mean, with them being 4-7, it's shocking because they have the number one ranked defense in the whole Big 12.
Yeah.
And if they can continue to perform that way, I think they can keep UCF to very few points. You know, I think UCF has still kind of gone back and forth with their quarterbacks this year. You know, they had this Dylan Risk kid, This freshman who went in for a little while, seems like they've kind of gone back to KJ Jefferson a little bit. He's their season leader. He's got 1,000 yards passing on 108 attempts, 64 completions, a completion percentage of about 59%. So not super, super killer. He's got 7 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. He's been sacked 13 times. You know, I think that very much like Utah and Houston, UCF has just seen some kind of moderate production from their quarterbacks.
So, interesting.
They also had Ja'Kari Brown, number 11, who was who we talked about when BYU played them.
Yeah, I thought Risk was still starting for them, but it sounds like they're just kind of all over the place. I did see Brown in their last game. I guess I saw Risk and Brown in their last game both playing.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. I just I thought I had seen earlier in the year that KJ Jefferson's stats. I mean, they benched him early in the year, so for him to be the leading passer, he had to have gotten in due to injury, or I guess
they pulled him. They pulled him, I think, 3 or 4 games into the season because things weren't working. But Gus Malzahn is a very run heavy guy, like as an offensive mind, and so I mean they do like just as a quick. I'm skipping over to scheme real quick, but it's very run heavy. They do, you know, Harvey's really good at RJ Harvey, the running back. He's very good at cutbacks and reading blocks. They do pulling guards, buck sweeps, power counter, you know, zone offense, jet motions, jet sweeps, lots of like multiple running back sets. So quarterback makes a lot of reads. So he's very involved in the game. And even in the passing game, they utilize running backs a lot. Lots of swing routes and
lots of RPOs.
Yeah, RPOs, and they'll use receivers to clear out space underneath for running backs to go. Lots of play action. So because Ja'Kari Brown's more of their traditional runner, but as like a running quarterback, and I've seen him go in as like a run package, and I've also seen RJ Harvey take direct snaps. But so Harvey's 5'9", 208, you know, kind of a bowling ball build. He's got 1,458 yards on the season, 132 per game, 6.9 per carry, 21 touchdowns. Wow.
That's a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah, and he gets a couple catches per game. He's got 248 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns on the receiving end. So, and then they really have one main receiver. That's Kobe Hudson, number 2. He's 6'1", 200. He's got 691 yards, which is good for about 62.8 per game, 4 touchdowns, and 40 total receptions. So personnel-wise, that's kind of, I don't know, was there another guy that you wanted to highlight there?
Just their second leading receiver is actually a tight end, Randy Pittman Jr. He's 6'2", 225. Pretty, you know, not the biggest tight end you've ever seen, but he's got some meat on him.
Shout out to the tight end.
Tight ends, baby. He's got 28 receptions for 371 yards, only 2 touchdowns. So I think that kind of speaks a lot to, like you said, the strategy that your offense employs when your second leading receiver, you know, has less than 400 yards receiving on the year. It's not a lot. You know, I think that is in stark contrast to your leading running back, like you mentioned, RJ Harvey, who's definitely going to eclipse, 1,500, maybe even 1,600 yards on the season this year. So,
So as a,
the game plan for BYU, for Utah's defense again becomes a lot more simple. You know, contain the running quarterback, contain RJ Harvey, should be pretty doable.
Yeah. So UCF, they're actually 10th in the nation in like rushing play percentage. They run it 60% of the time. So, you know, majority run, and they just, like you said, I mean, Utah's got a stout defense, just make them one dimensional. Like Kyle says, this, I don't think the team's good enough to beat you if you can make them one dimensional. So, And then when it comes to their defense, it's not a great defense. They're allowing about as many points per game as they score, which is 29. Mm-hmm. They're allowing 371 yards a game. They are 122nd in FBS, allowing 47.6% opponent third down conversion. They're pretty good at run defense. But I would imagine Utah could still take advantage of that. They are bad in the pass.
Well, I think it has to do with just, I mean, if they're going to continue to just try to pound the rock and be super predictable, I'll be really sad if after watching what Luke was able to do last week, you know, letting him spread his wings and let him throw the ball downfield. And then once they've started to back off a little bit, then let him run a read option where he actually gives himself the option to keep the ball. That's how you can make the running game and the passing game and plays like an option read work for you. I'll be so sad if they just take Luke and they plug him into the same old play calling they've been doing all year, where it's just hand the ball off at the middle, try to pass it long to medium, incomplete, and then try to run it. It's just, if they keep on plugging him into the same system, it's just going to be sad and boring and depressing, and they may very well lose this game too. I think that the defense has something to be proud of in the way they've played this year. You know, number one defense in the Big 12, despite all their struggles. But the offense is just, they're down in the dumps. They're searching for some sort of hope, some sort of reason to be here on Friday. And my hope is that Luke will, you know, he'll be the chosen one, like just like in Star Wars.
I'm a peacock. You got to let me fly.
Yes, exactly. He's Mark Wahlberg in the other guys. So I think for me, you know, despite whatever UCF is able to do on the defensive side of the ball, how good their run defense is, whatever, I think you try to let Luke lead you, let him open up the offense again, let him remind the team what it's like to have fun playing football, to be out there playing loose, playing free, playing fast, you know. And then once those lanes start to open up a little bit, then, you know, let Mekhi eat. You know, feed the beast and let him, you know, get 100 yards rushing on his last game with the Utes. And, you know, finish off what has been, I think for me, the worst year of football I can confidently say that I have ever seen the Utes play in my lifetime. I don't remember the Utes ever having a year this bad.
That's rough.
So it'd be nice to see him end it on a good note.
So Whittingham's only had, I think, three losing seasons with Utah, but I think they were all five win seasons. So I imagine he's going to want to keep it that way. I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure the team obviously does too, but I just if you stifle their run, maybe force a turnover, you know, open up the run with some, by letting, I just blanked, Batari, throw the ball, sling it a little bit, maybe, you know, do a little bit different, do something a little more than just, you know, out routes and slants and hitches and stuff. And then the other thing I was just thinking was, you know, hold them, if you can hold them to field goals, I think you got a chance in that. I think you got a really solid chance in that game. So, yeah, we'll see. I had a quick score prediction. I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to say or if...
No, you go.
Okay, so I was going to say Utah win it in a close one, 20-17. And really their defense kind of shores them up again, but because of the reliance on the run game that UCF has, they can't really get everything going, and so Utah's able to take advantage and just kind of control the game.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna give a very hopeful score prediction, just something to, you know, give myself to chew on and hope for this last game, since this is the bowl game basically. I'm gonna hope that Utah can come out And they can knock the socks off the Knights. Gosh, I keep on thinking they're playing Houston. They can knock the socks off of the Knights, and maybe they can come out of this game with a win, 28-3.
Nice, something like that. That'd be dope.
Be nice and cool. Be very, very cool. So, anything else for you, Dion, this week?
Nope. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Enjoy some food. Enjoy some football. And so you guys know, I think Andrew and I were talking about this. So we'll obviously do a review next week. I imagine we talked about, regardless of whether BYU makes the championship game or not, I think we want to do a preview of that anyway, just because that's a big game.
Yeah,
and
it'd be fun.
And then I imagine we'll want to do some sort of season review. BYU's going to get a bowl game regardless, so we'll be able to do that. But anyway, yeah, so enjoy the week, the long weekend, watch some football, eat some turkey, and go Utes, go Cougs. Good.